Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is now 7:09 here at WCCO. Welcome. You are listening to Steele Talking, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. It is what I love to do is sit here and gab with you on a Sunday night. In fact, there will be a time when we'll get a chance to talk tonight. So stay tuned. I look forward to hearing from you. There's so much going on in our world. Are you ready? Are you paying attention? Are you awake? The elections are coming up. Here we go. Woo! That's right, honey. It makes me scream. That's all right, right? Oh, my goodness. The snow today was not even attractive. I just need you to know, Susie Jones, from our newsroom, I had a hard time watching it.
I really did. It flipped me out. I opened the front door. Caught me
unbelievable.
Off. I did not expect that. It hit me like a ton of bricks.
Ton of bricks. My older sister is a pastor in St. Paul Park, and she leaves early, you know, to get, and she opens up her curtains and says, "Oh, my God." And she texted all of us, right? All of us, and said, "Oh, my God."
I know.
And she took film of it and everything. It was just, wow. How do we not see that coming?
I don't know. That was a trip because I didn't expect it. Did you know it was coming, Shletta?
No, and I was surprised, and I had to beat back children from the door who were trying to find snow boots and snow pants.
Oh, so they get out.
It was time to make the snowman.
Right. Calm down.
Yeah, come on back in.
But I look forward to that time. I do.
Yeah.
But to go from August to winter.
it's a whiplash. And literally, it's going to be 60 on Thursday. So
yeah. That's what they tell us, though.
I know. Who knows, right?
Yeah, that's what. So I would love to get Mike Lynch on or somebody on that could just tell us, how did we miss that?
Right. Where was...
Because it was cold this morning. I need y'all to know, Mama got up and put her feet on the floor. Did I not? And honest to goodness, the chill. The chill. You know, how do you stay on the ground like that? I had to look for socks. Didn't have my house shoes with me. I had to look for socks. Okay, because I'm not a girl of socks.
No?
No.
Oh, I got to have my socks are closer to my bed than anything else. Mm-hmm. I got my socks right there. And arms, I can get my socks right there.
If I could do flip-flops until like December 15th, I'd be the happiest.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
But I can't.
You can't.
It's
too cold.
We never can here. It's too cold. So, okay, Susie, I got to ask you because you and I both are single, right? Shaletta's married.
We are.
I'm just X me out.
Now, you can weigh in. Pretend you're single.
You can pretend, right? Okay, so here's the thing. What happens when you meet someone that's just feels right, right? Just, you know, conversation is good. And then you start to realize that you're complete opposites. Right?
Oh.
Like you don't like the same foods or the same restaurants. You don't agree on politics. You don't like the same movies. You don't even like the same friends, right? You don't like hanging out with this person that you might have in common. But it's like, no, I don't like that person. I mean, what do you do about that? Have you ever had that?
I want to know if you have, if you're sharing this because it's your own little personal story.
Yeah, I married him. See, here's the challenge. Let me tell you something.
You kill me.
You know, they tell us everything we need to know long before we ever get to the altar. And it's amazing because you look back over your life, you go, you know what? But I remember him telling me that. Absolutely. I married a man. We were not on the same page politically. So we made a pact not to ever discuss who we voted for except one time. And that was when Ventura was elected.
Oh.
We didn't like the same foods. He had a really sensitive stomach. So I had to make two meals, you know, one for me and the children and one for him. You know, the movies, he wanted to go see those really weird kind of avant-garde movies like Eraser.
Yeah.
Did you ever see Eraserhead?
No, I did not.
Eraserhead?
Mm-mm.
Black and white?
Never saw it.
Girl, to this day, I will never see it again. It was so disturbing. I actually said to him, "Are you sick?" You know, there was nothing sexual about it. Mm-mm. It was just a weird movie.
Twisted.
twisted. Something's wrong with that.
And you're asking yourself.
I'm asking myself.
Why would I have married someone with all those red flags? Why would I have done it anyway?
Why, Shaletta?
You know, there's a simple statement that we ignore.
What is it?
Maya Angelou said, when someone shows you who they are,
believe them. Believe them.
And we will not do that. We will say, oh, he just, you know what? He's not really like that.
Oh, I can change
him. I can change him.
Oh, you know what? He's just going through a bad time right now. He's going to turn around. He's going to come around. She didn't say, when they tell you who they are, believe them. She said, when they show you who they are, believe them. And that is something so simple. It's not a paragraph that we have all memorized. It was one statement that rings true to this day. Mm-hmm. That woman is in her grave. That statement is still alive. And somehow we cannot hold true and fast to that.
I'm just saying, you know, I don't quite understand how this works. And by the way, we can make that decision over and over and over again.
Absolutely. Which is the good news.
That's the good news?
Yeah. I mean, that you might have made a few missteps along the way that you wish you could have got back.
Yeah.
I personally, though, you know, you just got to keep going. You know, you can't have regrets. I mean, you don't regret marrying your husband. You have beautiful children. You have a nice life. And he played a role in your life at the time that was right at the time. I mean, it ended, and that's sad. But you come away with it with a different sense of yourself. A stronger sense of yourself. I know I certainly am very grateful in a strange way that I had a divorce. I hated it. I didn't want to be divorced, but I have become a much stronger woman as a result. I think I've seen that a couple of times. My sister is a great example. You know, she went on and got her master's degree and is a great teacher now in Austin Public Schools, and she's a remarkable woman who has reached deep into her soul to become something that she might not have been had she stayed in a marriage.
I'm sorry, I'm stuck on that first sentence you said.
What did
I say? Were you asking me a question? You said, I'm sure you didn't regret marrying him. You have two beautiful children.
And I didn't pause for the answer.
Right.
I went on about my little monologue.
But I love
and it's
that
your
you did.
Show.
No. I love that you
I'll
did,
be quiet.
Susie. You know I don't have a problem with that.
No.
I love that you said that. Mm. But here's the thing. In retrospect, you look, or in hindsight, you look and say, okay, do I regret that? And then you look at your beautiful children and you go, oh, you can't regret that. They're really, you know. And I said the other night I was speaking, and I said, you know, love is worth the fall. You may bust your head open, but it's worth the fall,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm starting to wonder about that.
You are.
As I get older, I'm starting to wonder about that.
Are you wondering?
Well, I'm wondering if it really is worth the fall, because sometimes when you bust your head, you don't get up.
Are you talking about going?
Silence.
No, I'm just wondering. I mean, going forward, I kind of get it, Shaletta, because I think as an older woman, you do measure your risks a little more carefully.
Now, that's true.
Yeah.
That's
you know
true.
That I am a woman now that will not tolerate much because I don't need to. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm on my own. I have a house. I have a car. I have a job. So if something's not working for me, I don't need to stick it out.
And then you have the life experience, too. When you're young, you think, I'm going all in. And if I go all in, he's going to come all in.
Yeah, well, see, that's the beauty of it,
right?
And we're
going to work it out. But then when you get a little bit older, you're like, he ain't going all in.
Yeah. No, exactly. And I get the arranged marriages. I don't want an arranged marriage ever.
No.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But I do get how they got there in those countries.
Sure.
Because they feel like the parents have been through some stuff. And they can choose the person for you, or it could be based on money, the dowry, that sort of
mm-hmm.
thing. But I do kind of understand some of that.
Mm-hmm.
I would never want that for my children. But let me tell you, I can imagine there are so many people listening who have been at this place before, right?
Mm-hmm.
And here we are now in this whole Me Too thing, and we're talking, well, last night I went to an event, and it was a beautiful event. And the woman that was singing and performing is a cabaret act.
Uh-huh.
She's fabulous, great performer. But, man, did she get some raunchy jokes in. Okay?
Did she?
Yeah. And so there were men, you know, all over the place and women all over the place. And, you know, she had to stop and say, hey, in this space right now, it's okay. You're allowed to comment or you're allowed to. I know outside of these doors. It was just bizarre. And I thought to myself, if I was dating somebody like that, would I be okay with him or with her saying that to the person I was dating? You know, the person that might have been there with me?
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking, you don't want to talk about this joke when we leave here.
Uh-huh.
Right. I don't
Interesting.
Want to hear it.
So hey, can I ask you a quick question? How is St. Olaf? I'm so sorry I missed St.
Oh,
Olaf.
Oh, I'm going to have to tell you in a minute. Let's go to the phone.
Oh, okay.
Who
we got
do we have
phone?
Calling in, Shaletta?
Oh, we have Neil from St. Paul.
Oh. Hey, Neil from St. Paul.
Sounds like some girls' coffee talk there now.
Yes.
It's good coffee, Neil.
Oh, I think maybe a little late for coffee, though. Anyways,
little Bailey's in there.
Yeah, little Bailey's.
It's interesting. I think it kind of sparked my thought, too, when I was younger. I'm in my early 50s, and I'm thinking, we all have had an experience staying with somebody we kind of felt in our mind. My thoughts were there was just enough of the goodness or the fire you get between each. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
That first kiss and everything, and then that romance. There's just enough of the goodness to outweigh the deep down thing that's really irritates you about them,
right?
You know,
that's the truth.
Well, and you think, oh, the spark's so good, I could just kind of forget about that pain in the ass when they're.
I think you can say that nowadays.
Yeah, okay, you're right. And I think we're all. I think same situation. I think we're all better now from learning from the situation. Now as we get older, it's like if it ain't working, I ain't having it, you know, it's our choices, but we all learn from it. When we're young, though, we're all full of, you know, that passion. Woo, you know?
Yeah, buddy. I know what you're talking about, Neil. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. Who do we have, Shaletta, joining us now?
We have Pauline from Ham Lake.
Pauline. Hey, Pauline. That's a name I don't hear often.
Oh,
how are you?
My gosh. Yep. And my nickname is Polly Wally Doodle All the Day. I am calling. No, swear. It is. That's not even, I mean, laugh about it, but that's the real deal. Shaletta, Susie Johns, and you.
Yeah.
Queen Bee.
Yeah.
I am calling in to just tell you how much I love you all so very much. And your point and the moments you bring up for all of us women are fabulous. I am going through I just turned 61, going through a huge life changeover. Yeah. And all of you women are my rock stars.
Oh, you're all right with us, Pauline. Thank you for calling in, honey. Thank you. Keep listening because we got a lot to talk
about. My best to all of you. I just thank you. I appreciate y'all very much.
Thank you. If anyone else has a call and would like to know, you're welcome to do so. We might only have a few minutes, but we will make time for you. We'll be back in a moment. It is now 7:26 almost here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steel Talking. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. And the bottom line is there's a whole lot going on that we have to really pay attention to. And I want to let you know about tonight's hour, this first hour. You've heard us talking and having a good time. There are some serious things going on in our nation, especially when it comes to polling. Have you been noticing all the polls that come out? There are so many polls, I don't even know which ones are reputable, which ones are not. Well, I'm actually going to talk to a man by the name of Clifford Young, and he is the managing director of Ipsos Public Affairs, polling and public sector practice in the United States. And he's been over about 80 different polls, and he kind of knows how it does. His research specialties include social and public opinion trends and crisis management and political risk polling and political polling. And that's the one I'm concerned about, is the political polling. Because as you know, in 2016, we had the challenge of, you know, listening to the polls. And then after the election happened, all of a sudden we realized the polls didn't matter. That now people are thinking they aren't true, they aren't real. Should we be paying attention to the polls? What does it mean if we don't? A lot of people already have their minds made up about what they are or who they are going to vote for, or referendums that they're going to vote on, how they're going to say yes or no to what. So a lot of us are already prepared for who we want in all of these offices, or at least most of them. Now, some of us don't go and get the sample ballot, and we don't look to see, you know, who's all on our ballot in our districts. We have to do that, and I encourage you to do that. If you don't know where to go and see a sample ballot in your area, go to the Secretary of State Department, the Minnesota Secretary of State, go to their website and find out. It'll tell you where you can get a lot of this information from, because it's really important that you come prepared to vote and be that educated voter. Another thing, we don't hear often, sometimes you watch these commercials if you're just now getting involved and you see, oh, you know, the election is coming up. Who should I vote for? They don't use Republican, Democrat all the time. Sometimes at the end of the commercial, you'll hear in this low voice, this was, you know, this was brought to you by or paid for by the RNCC or the DNCCC, or, you know, you'll hear this little soft voice. But sometimes you don't. So a lot of us are asking, well, which side of the aisle are they on? Right. So you got to do your research. You got to figure out how they voted, if they've already, if they are been former politicians, or, you know, if this is their first time running, go to their website and look at what they stand for. You're supposed to have on your website, if you're running for office, where you stand on certain critical life, pro-choice, you know. Tell us where you are on things. And they usually do that in a website. So I really want to make sure that we know how critical this election is this year. It really is. We need everyone to get out and vote. No matter where you stand, everyone needs to get out and vote. And those of you who say that you are independent, please help me understand what that means. I'm hoping we'll have time to open up the phones. And I want to ask, if you are an independent, define that for me, because I don't see how anyone cannot be sure on who they are anymore, or standing in the middle going, well, do I want to go left? Do I want to go right? I haven't really made up my mind yet. We're so polarized, it seems almost impossible. Yet, I want you to tell me if that is impossible or not. 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. We've run out of time for this half hour, but I promise you there will be another time when you can call in and inform me. Please. Is that caller one that wants to talk about it really quickly?
Yeah, Ed from Golden Valley is on the line, Gerald.
All right, educate me, Ed. We only have a few seconds. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Good evening, everybody. Good evening. First of all, love your show.
Thank you.
An independent is someone that can go both ways. I mean, I'm voting Republican and Democrat this next election. How can anyone in this state vote for Keith Ellison to be the top cop after what he's been alleged to do?
And I'm so glad you said alleged. I appreciate that. But how did we put President Trump or Donald Trump in office after all the things he did? Not allegedly, that he did. It has been proven. It is fact. So that's the question that we have to ask for anyone. We no longer can accept from our politicians that they are perfect, that they don't have anything in their past.
No. But here's my question. When you have young politicians in this wonderful state of ours that my kids looked up to, and on one side of their mouth, they talk about Kavanaugh, and on the other side of the mouth, they're silent when it comes to Keith Ellison. It's a travesty. These kids don't know what to believe, Gerald, and we need to get them to believe again.
I appreciate you calling in, Ed. And you said some things. I wish we had time to really parse those out. But do call again. I'd love to talk to you again, all right? Take care, Ed. All right, we're going to take a break, do a little weather, and come back in just a moment. It is now 7:35 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steele Talking, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. You've been listening to those that have been calling in, and thank you so much for doing so. It was our last caller, and we are waiting to hear from a guest. And while we are waiting for our guest, Clifford Young, to talk about polling, I want to talk to you. If you'd like to give us a call, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. We want to talk about, if you are an independent, can you please tell me how it is that you are, you have to look at both sides of the fence to figure out who you're voting for in just a couple of weeks? I'm very curious. And mainly because we are so polarized. Everyone keeps talking about how polarized we are. And if we are as polarized as we are being told we are, then I absolutely would like to know. I absolutely would like to know, how is it that you don't know for sure who you are voting for? It's fine if you're crossing the lines and you want to vote for different people, but I'm curious to know what you, if someone says, well, you're an independent, to many of us, it means you're not quite sure that you can vote for either party or both parties or depending on which election it is. Or do you feel like people are even courting you this time? Everyone was courting you in 2016, but this election, you don't hear a whole lot about the independents. So whenever you would like, join us at 651-989-9226. Our guest is joining us now. We're going to find out from Clifford Young all about polling. Who is he? He's a managing director of Ipsos Public Affairs, Polling, and Public Sector Practice in the United States. His research specialties include social and public opinion trends, crisis management, political risk polling, and political polling, which I am most interested in. He has worked with a wide variety of corporate, government, media, and political clients. He currently oversees Ipsos U.S. election polling for Reuters and is the spokesperson for Ipsos Public Affairs in the United States. Welcome to WCCO, sir.
It's great to be here. How are you?
I'm doing great. May I call you Clifford?
You can call me Clifford. That's great. You can call me Cliff, too. Most people call me Cliff.
All right, Cliff. Well, first of all, you got to tell us about, is it Ipsos? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
That's perfectly, yeah, that's perfectly fine. That's correct. Yeah, it's Ipsos.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, Ipsos is the third largest market research and polling firm in the world. We have offices in 90 countries, and we cover 130. I'm responsible for the Ipsos in the U.S. Mm-hmm. I'm a professional pollster, and so we track public opinion over time. And we work with, as you were saying, a wide variety of clients, and obviously we cover elections, especially for the media. You cited some of our clients. And obviously, we're neck deep in it right now, right? We're in the middle of the midterms.
Yes, we are. And by the way, I understand you were in Brazil before you came.
I lived in Brazil for 10 years.
Oh, my gosh. You're lucky man.
I ran the company there. Excuse me?
You're a lucky man.
Yeah, it was great. It was a wonderful experience. Was there for 10 years. Ran the company in Brazil and polled in Brazil as well as the rest of Latin America. So it was a great experience.
Okay, so polling is obviously important, not just here in our country, but around the world. Obviously, what you are doing is so important. So first of all, tell us what a poll is in simple terms.
Yeah, well, a poll or a survey, right, mm-hmm. Is a scientific technique to go out and gauge a population. To understand what they think, to understand what they'll do or what they've done. And it's used by a wide variety of organizations and institutions, everywhere from large corporations that want to understand what consumers are thinking and doing, to governments that want to understand specifically what people are thinking and doing so they can improve public policy, to politicians and parties to understand what people need and want. And so a poll or survey is an instrument to do that. And typically what we'll do is we'll select a sample. We won't talk to everyone in a population. So we won't talk to everyone in Minnesota or in Illinois or in the United States. We'll take a sample. And the sample is sort of like a blood sample, right? We go to the doctor and the doctor takes out some blood from us to do tests. A poll sample or survey sample is the same sort of thing. So we'll take a small select sample from the population. Typically, it's about 1,000 interviews or so with people. In doing that, we'll also write a questionnaire. So whatever the subject matter we're interested in, we'll organize in a structured way questions to ask people. And ultimately, we'll collate and aggregate that information into some sort of statistic to understand the specific issue at hand.
The question is everything when it comes to polling.
Yeah. Everything really, but it's really to understand what people think and do, right? And so whether we're talking to the general population or the population of Minnesota or of, let's say, St. Paul or Chicago, for instance, whether it be we want to talk with doctors for whatever reason, it's a way to gauge what that population thinks and does.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm very clear on what a poll is, but I do find it interesting when I run into people, which I did recently, and they said to me, oh, you know, the big survey thing, the poll thing that happens when we do the census. And it's not the same thing.
Yeah, there's a similar logic in the sense that in a census, we want to understand what the population thinks and does. But the difference is the census, we talk to everyone, mm-hmm. or we try to talk to everyone, right? Mm-hmm. It's very expensive to do. It takes a lot of resources, and only governments have the capacity to do that. Mm-hmm. And in the United States, we do it once every 10 years. A poll's like taking a little subset. And so, like, the analogy of the population to understand what they think and do. So the analogy would be, you know, a doctor takes a small sample of blood from us. That's like a poll, right?
Right.
They go and they do tests on it. They come back to us and they tell us how we are. A census would be the doctor's taking all the blood out of us, analyzing it and putting it back in, right? Mm-hmm. And so the census is basically a enumeration or accounting of everyone in the population. Mm-hmm. And a poll or survey is taking a small subset or sample to gauge what's going on. Obviously, it's much more cost effective to do a small sample rather than a large census.
Yeah, and the census also almost demands that you tell the truth of what's going on so in your life.
Yeah,
I mean, they want your personal business.
Right? Yeah. The census, a lot of the census is descriptive. So the census is much more interested in, let's say, what our gender is, what our age, what our ages are, how much education we have,
who's living
how
in
much
the house.
We make.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They don't ask political questions like who would you vote for, or who do you approve or disapprove of Obama or of Trump, for instance. They stay away from those sorts of questions. So they're really more at the demographics, because mm-hmm. ultimately in the United States, the census is written into the Constitution.
Right.
And it's used every 10 years to allocate the number of representatives by state. States, it helps in the districting of congressional districts, et cetera.
Right. But political, you know, when it comes to political polls, the questions that are asked, the way those questions are formed is most important. Not just the question itself, but how it's formed, the question begins and how it ends. So in your expertise, what's most important when it comes to polling and asking the question, forming the question?
Yeah. Okay. That's totally right. So on the one hand, the sample and being representative of the population is super important. Let's set that aside. And you're asking about the question. You know, the issue is really what's your objective. And so if your objective, let's say, would be my objective, let's say, and you cited in your introduction the fact that we work for Thomson Reuters and we track elections there, our objective in that specific case is to give an unbiased representation of what the population thinks about a given issue. Mm-hmm. So our questions, you want to be balanced, and you don't want to push people to one side or the other, right? Mm-hmm. And so we wouldn't basically say, you know, we wouldn't ask a question like this: do you approve or disapprove of President Donald Trump, the Republican, the conservative? We wouldn't put a word in like that that would bias it, push it one way or the other way, right?
Okay.
We'd try to leave out potentially biasing words like Republican or conservative. And that the objective of that sort of poll would be to represent as well as we can an unbiased, unfiltered view of what the population thinks of the government, of Donald Trump or the government at the given time. On the flip side, if you're working on a political campaign, you might want to understand what are those biasing terms that could really convince people to support our candidate versus another one. So terms like, for the sake of argument, Second Amendment or Black Lives Matter or Me Too, these are terms that are very politically charged, for some people positively, for other people negatively. And in a campaign or pushing an issue, you might want to understand that when you build your message, right? And so the point being is, yes, you're very right. The formulation of the questions are super important. Sometimes, like in the case of Ipsos and me specifically, when working with a media firm like Thomson Reuters, we want very unbiased questions. But others who work on campaigns or with issues might be very interested in understanding the biasing nature of certain terms because they're pushing certain agendas and messages.
Okay. The challenge for me is that they know certain communities, and they, you know, the polling companies seem to know how to phrase it for the demographic, right? So you're collecting information all the time before you even present the questions, correct?
We're trying. What we try to do in our questionnaire and asking the questions is not to have a bunch of questions up front that bias the questions, right? We're very careful to have those most important questions up front that come first, for instance, up front. But there are a certain set of questions that can come beforehand. Sometimes you might ask demographics first. Sometimes you might ask a general question. But you were driving at a specific question. So, excuse me.
So what are the challenges of, or do you have limitations on how you can ask a question or how many questions you can ask?
That's a great question. Nowadays it's very hard to have a very long questionnaire. People just don't have the time. Mm-hmm. They don't have the inclination, right? They might have 10 minutes, right. 15 minutes at the most to actually answer a poll or a questionnaire on a poll. And so that limits it. So maybe we have about, 15, 20 questions at the most. Some of those can have subsets to them. So time is obviously a key limiting factor. Mm-hmm. But also we have to be very careful not only in formulating the question, but also in how we structure it. So, we have to be careful not to have biasing questions at the beginning if we're asking questions that are super important at the end. So, for instance, if we're asking something called a ballot question, that is, if the elections were today, who would you vote for? Would you vote for, sake of argument, would you vote for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? That's the sort of question we want at the beginning of the questionnaire.
Yeah.
Because all the other questions could potentially influence that question negatively or positively. So that's something that we have to be very careful about and to just be very transparent to your listeners. When you evaluate a poll, try to get a hold of the questionnaire. If there are a bunch of strange questions or biasing questions that come before the important questions like the approval of the government or who you'd vote for, those should be suspect, because best practices suggest that we try to have an unbiased questionnaire with unbiased questions at the beginning.
So you have to, it's like you're forming a limerick in poetry, right? When you're putting these questions together. That's amazing. I had no idea that much was put into it.
That's a very interesting and important point. Sort of, questionnaires and, writing questions are very much like, they very much follow norms of conversation. So if I include information at the beginning of a conversation, the person that's in the conversation with you will assume that's going to be should be imputed into their understanding of what you're saying. So mm-hmm. if I start talking about bananas first and then I jump over and talked about Donald Trump and whether I approve of him or not, there might not be a connection between the two. And I might think that's strange. That's not a very good questionnaire and sequence of questions. But if I were to say, have a bunch of questions about American exceptionalism and how awesome America is, and then I ask a question about whether you approve or disapprove of Donald Trump, I might have a more positive reaction to Donald Trump because of the sequencing of the questions. The point being is, and obviously the negative is the case as well. If we start talking about, let's say, separation of families at the border and then ask about his approval ratings, that can have a negative effect. So to your point, we have to be very careful of how we structure it. And questionnaires and responses to them really follow these sort of norms of conversation and how people impute and infer meaning from them.
All right. We have to take a break. Can you stick with me? I just have a two more questions for you, sir.
Yeah, no, this is awesome.
All right, Clifford. We'll be right back with Clifford Young, Managing Director of Ipsos Public Affairs, Polling and Public Sector Practice in the United States. It is now 7:52 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steele Talk, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. We've been talking about polls and the importance of them, and I'm sure that you're getting some phone calls right. I never get the phone call. Welcome back, Clifford, or Cliff.
Hey, it's great. It's great to be back.
All right, so I don't. I am on the mobile phone. That's my only number, and I cannot tell you how few times someone calls me to poll me. With all the new technology that polls are using, are we reaching, every segment that we need to reach?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's obviously a continual challenge of the polling industry. So, if we miss a slice of the population, we get things wrong, right? Whether we was predicting election or forecasting whether a product would be successful or not for a company. And so that's what we're always challenged with. And what we're increasingly using are multiple methodologies, right? So we combine landline polling with cell phones, with internet even today. Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of mixing and matching, combining, so we have a better kind of coverage of the population in general. Where we fall down typically is with younger, you know, we have a harder time reaching those younger citizens, right?
And when it comes to political polling, we need to reach them.
We need to reach them. We have a hard time reaching minorities as well. And so we have to think in our design, added resources and different sorts of methodologies to be able to capture those populations. I would say the market or the industry, excuse me, writ large is focused on that, but that's a continual challenge, obviously.
Okay, so then what do we do? We have this election coming up in, less than 3 weeks now, and we know that it's an important election. We know that the polling is happening. We know that we're seeing polls every day. And by the way, I went to Wikipedia. I know it's a secondary source, so forgive me, Professor. But, it's not a primary source, but it lists 23 to 25 of the main polling companies in the United States. And you and I both know, we hear about, you know, mergers of some of these, or you've got the partnerships, you know, two different entities that are doing polling all of a sudden. So how do we trust? How do we know who to trust when it comes to polling?
Yeah, that's a great question. Indeed, increasingly over time, there's more and more polls out there. Indeed, in 2016, at every level, at the presidential, at the senatorial, at the congressional, at the local election, there were 16,000 plus polls done in 2016. I mean, just immense amounts. And the
Did
question
you say 16,000?
I said 16,000 plus. Yeah, 16,000, 16,000.
And you're talking across the world?
Across the United States in one electoral cycle.
Oh,
can you believe that?
No.
That's just massive. And so, listen, for society, on the one hand, it's important to have information. So I think it's a good thing writ large. But the question is, how does the citizen kind of separate the wheat from the chaff, right?
Exactly.
What is good? What is bad?
We got 3 minutes. Go for it.
Yeah. And what I would say is, be an informed citizen. If you see a poll and they're citing numbers, a good pollster will have a link in the story to their what we call top line, to their basic data. It's not just in the write-up. It's also sort of a series of tables. That top line, it's called, should have a description of the methodology, a link to the firm. There should be absolute transparency there. And so if there's not transparency on information, you probably shouldn't trust the poll as much. If there's more transparency, the poll could be wrong, but at the very least, individuals in the firm conducting it are professional and following professional standards. So the issue will be transparency. Can I get a hold of the raw data, not just the write-up?
Right.
Is there a description of the methodology?
Right.
Is there a link to the polling firm? Does that polling firm, as best as I can see, does it have experience? And that's how a citizen informs himself.
Well, that's how students do it all the time. So I wish everyone would, have the wherewithal to know how to do that. Okay, the final question then, because we only have about a minute and a half. When it comes to this election, a lot of people don't trust the polls from what happened last time. How do you convince them right now in 40 seconds that they should?
Okay. First and foremost, the polls weren't completely off in 2016. At the national level, they were only off by one. Where they fell down were in some of the swing states. Okay. Second, midterm elections typically are much less about, whether you're off by half a percent or not, and much more about atmosphere, kind of where things are going, where the trends are going. And what we do know is, on the House side, things are trending blue. Things are trending Democrat on the House side. On the senatorial side, things tend to be, they're trending even or a little bit towards the Republicans. The point being is, overall, we think we have a clear picture of probably what the outcomes are, not necessarily the specifics of it. And again, in 2016 and even before that, we weren't off by a lot. We were just off on the wrong side of the fence.
Yeah, we hear the polls for Trump was like 15% chance of winning.
Yeah, but you know what? This is my huge critique. I'll be quite frank. I believe that was an incorrect interpretation. We have to be always, always careful as professionals in the industry, as well as citizens, When looking at numbers like that, mm-hmm. I think we should have a fair degree of skepticism when you get a number like 85% or 15%. I like to talk about trends. It looks like it's going this way. It looks like it's going that way.
Yeah, we hear a lot about trends, and I think you're right on some sense in that. But people are really, really antsy right now. So thank you so much for joining us, Clifford. We have run out of time, but thank you for joining us. We sure appreciate it. All right, that is Clifford Young, Managing Director of Ipsos. We're going to take a break, and we will be back in a moment. By the way, you want to stay tuned for this next interview with some candidates. We'll be back in just a moment. Issues.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.